I'm delighted now to welcome to the program Helene Silverblatt. She is the co-editor of the book Harvest of Blossoms, Poems from a Life Cut Short. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much for having me.
So these are the poems of a young poet who died in a Nazi labor camp in 1942. She's kind of a new Anne Frank. Her name is Selma Meerbaum-Eisinger, and she turns out to be a relative of yours.
Yes.
How did you come upon this whole story?
You know, basically, for many years, I never even knew that my mother had cousins who had died in the Holocaust. And what's interesting is that for many years, I thought we were one of those lucky families who didn't lose anybody in the Holocaust. And until I was actually living in New Mexico in the early 80s, did I realize that my mother had a first cousin who was actually a well-thought-of poet, or whose poetry was becoming more well-known in Europe. And I can tell that story of how I found out.
Yeah, tell us her. What do we know of her?
Right.
Yeah.
So actually, it's amazing to even find out anything about her, because she died when she was so young. She was only 18. But we have records of what she was like from people who knew her, and she must have affected people tremendously, because otherwise they wouldn't have written about her in general memoirs, for example. But she apparently was a very independent, frisky, politically engaged woman who loved to read. The evidence of that is that this album of poetry that she left included five or six translations that she made from Yiddish, Romanian, and French into German.
I mean, that was an era where there were so many people who spoke many languages by the time they were 18 years old.
Right, and also the community that she was from was famous for that.
Yeah.
And it's a community that even Tony Ute talked about as a sort of bastion of multiculturalism, where another well-known poet from the region said, even the fish are silent in five languages. Isn't that a great image? And it's a place where books and people used to live. Our cousin Paul Celan said that. It's a place of books and people. And it was the kind of place where she thrived, because she would go on walks with her friends. She would knock on their doors at 10 at night and say, let's go to the park, and where they would meet and discuss the important political issues of the day and argue about what Zionism meant, and they'd argue about what socialism meant, and they argued about what their future might be. They'd argue about poetry. We know that there were certain writers that she loved, and even when she was, after the ghetto was formed in her community and her family was rounded up, that she took books with her and wrote to her friends about that.
High school students, teachers, and parents, take note. This is possible.
Yes, right.
Among teenagers.
Yes, right. Exactly. Well, it was part of how they, loved each other in a way. They loved each other through their own relationships and also through their literary connections.
And so there she was, born into a family that was, her father died. Her mother remarried. They were pretty poor, lived in just minimal accommodations, which of course seemed luxurious once they found themselves in the ghetto.
Right. And so she lived in a little house, and actually a little apartment that had just two rooms and did not have a kitchen to speak of. It did not have a bathroom. Actually I was able to visit, because the community of Chernivtsi itself has become interested in these famous people whose names were erased from their history. And my mother, who is Selma's closest living relative, and my sister and I went to Chernivtsi when a plaque was put on the wall of her apartment. And in our trips back, we've even been able to talk with people who somehow knew who she was and who still live in that building.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah. And every month that goes by, there are fewer people who will know.
Right.
And probably the people who knew her at this point are all gone.
Well, you know, an amazing thing happened. So this has been an amazing adventure, I should say, for me and my sister and my mother. And one of the amazing things that's happened is that because of this book, and because of the fact that we were able to get it translated into English, and We have met people who live in the United States who knew Sala. As a matter of fact, one of the people we talk about in the introduction who talked about this horrible moment when the Romanian thugs were just shooting people randomly, and she was moving with her friends, moving their piano and music stand to the ghetto where she was pushed and was hurt. We met the man who wrote that book, and he remembers Selma. He's a retired professor in California, and his sister, who was Berta, who was one of Selma's best friends, is still alive in Israel.
It's all the more extraordinary and horrifying given this highly literate, multicultural society that this hatred of Jews became so violent, even in her own... Really, it seemed like a beautiful city.
But it's extraordinary to think that a community where many people spoke Yiddish, for example, not only Jewish people, but it was part of the language group of that community, where people lived together and argued together and were passionate together and who went to school together, could then have this turnaround where people then killed each other without any clear understanding of why that was happening, except they were difficult times economically. There was also, I think, the historical time was also one of rising nationalism, which I think can be potentially very dangerous, where there were lots of people who were pit against one another. Romanians against Ukrainians, Ukrainians against Poles. There were lots of slaughters going on. And this became another one of those horrible slaughters where people today, I think, are finally, though, acknowledging what happened, trying to understand it, come to terms with it, and trying to recover their history so that it doesn't happen again, and their glorious history so that it doesn't happen again.
So Selma, this young poet, had some kind of love, who we find out a little bit about in her poetry.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so we can go back to the story of Selma's poems. What Selma did was she took these poems that she had written, these 50 so poems, and put them together into an album that she called Harvest of Blossoms. And she dedicated this album to the love of her life, Lezer Fichman, who was also, like her, an ardent labor Zionist, and was someone who was described as being kind of different from her. He was very correct. He was very careful. He was very brilliant. And it sounds like kind of constrained.
Yeah.
Whereas she was just a wild thing with frizzy hair, and she writes this wonderful poem about the little fuzz on his lips.
Right.
And... she took these poems when she knew she was being, when the roundup came, and gave them to a friend to give to him. And so he took these, so Lezer Fichman took the poems, and he took this album, Harvest of Blossoms, and took this album with him to another forced labor camp, another slave labor camp, where he survived. After the war, after the camp was liberated, he came back to Chernivtsi and gave the book to a mutual friend, Rene, because he wanted to go to what was then Palestine and was worried that something might happen. And tragically, the boat that he took to go to Palestine was blown up. But the poetry survived, including some lovely love poems and stories of tremendous fragility on her part. I'm sure you've read some of them, of her... her sense of what this love might mean and what it is not meaning at times. And her friend took the book and went on a refugee's journey across Europe for 2 years and had the poems in a backpack. She was then allowed to go to Israel, because at that time Palestine then became the state of Israel in 1948, and so she shipped her meager belongings on a boat ahead of her, kept the poems in her backpack. All of her belongings were lost, but the poems survived.
Amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
And then how did somebody, I mean, who looked for them later on?
So that's even wilder. So there was a small group of people who knew about Selma in Israel, but they weren't connected. And it took it took a very long time until the late 70s, from the late 40s, so about 30 years, for Selma's math teacher, who loved her, Hirsch Siegel, to try to get a version of her poems published when he became aware that Renee was living in Israel with the poems. People apparently knew that Selma wrote poems while she was writing them, but no one knew where the poems were. And it was only because of this chance encounter in Tel Aviv between Renee Abramovici and Hirsch Siegel, Selma's math teacher, that it came to light that she had these poems. He tried to get them published in Israel, but at that time, unfortunately, they were reluctant to publish anything in German. She was German-speaking primarily, and she wrote the poems in German. So he tried to have a small volume published privately, which was done. At the same time, another interesting, intrepid journalist, a German journalist named Jürgen Cirka, read one of Selma's poems, the poem called Poem, read that poem in an anthology of German post-war poems. And it was published next to a very well-known poem by Paul Celan called Todesfuge. Who was her cousin, right. And because Paul Celan had insisted that in order for the German press to publish Todesfuge, he insisted that this one poem of Selma's be published alongside of his. Which means somehow that he somehow had copies of poetry. Jürgen Cirka was so stunned by this poem that he wanted to know if there were more poems. And so he went to Israel thinking, well, there were only two places where there would be people who might know where these poems are. They'd either be in Israel or New York. And he went to Israel first. And we've met him, and he went from Chernivtsi home to Chernivtsi home.
Talk about looking for a needle in a
haystack. Right. He said he did enjoy the food, however. It was well worth it, and it's great food. And eventually he found Renee, and then they found another mutual cousin, another of the first cousins of my mother's group, who gave him permission to have the poems published by a German press. And so they were published in Hamburg in 1980. With an introduction by Jürgen Cirka, as well as a significant article in a major German magazine. And that started her popularity in Germany.
In Germany.
And in the German-speaking world.
And then this is the first time they've been published in English.
Exactly. And what's happened that's been amazing is that our lives have become so enriched by everything that Selma has done and the people she's influenced. I mean, she's become a darling of the certain rock and roll singers, and she's become topics of plays and music. And we just got back from Chernivtsi, where an entire poetry festival took place in honor of Paul Celan to kind of recreate their history. But Selma was part of that celebration where many, many people were gathered in many, many venues talking about poetry, doing disco poetry, doing theatrical productions around Paul Celan's work, having academic conversations about Selma's poetry, but celebrating, to me this was what was incredible, celebrating a community who had lost its history. I feel that it's hard to imagine what it would be like to be in a place where your history has been erased by warring armies. I mean, Selma was erased, and many people's lives, not just Selma's, were erased by the Nazis and their thugs. But then when the Russians came, they also kind of erased the history of that region and taught Dostoevsky and Tolstoy, but did not teach the literature of the region, which is extremely rich.
Yeah.
And so the fact that this community itself, and this is all started by a young entrepreneur who said, you know, Chernivtsi has a lot to offer. We know some more and more about its history. Let's celebrate by having a big poetry festival, which is what happened.
We're talking to Helene Silverblatt, who is co-editor of the book Harvest of Blossoms, Poems from a Life Cut Short, and it's the poems of Selma Meerbaum Eisinger. So what is Chernivtsi like now?
Well, you know, it's a very beautiful city. It's at the foothills of the Carpathian Mountains, So it's hilly.
What country is it in now?
Oh, right. So Chernivtsi is now in Ukraine.
Okay.
So now it's in western Ukraine.
And what are they? What language do they speak there? Is it still a multilingual place?
Well, you know, it isn't so much because of historical changes. Right now, most people speak Ukrainian and Russian because during the Soviet Ukraine period, until the dissolution of the Soviet Union, really Russian was the primary language that was spoken. And so even Ukrainian is having a resurgence there, even though there's been a lot of celebration of famous Ukrainian writers that who've been from Chernivtsi. But Russian was really the language that people spoke and the language that was taught in school.
In so many of the Soviet republics, who then reclaimed their language and culture later on, when you go there, can you feel in any way the previous era, the Jewish presence there?
Well, you know, we feel things. I would say yes, because there are plaques on walls of Selma's and other Rosa Auslander and other Jewish writers. There's also a tremendous interest among Ukrainians and others in reclaiming the old Jewish cemetery. So there are volunteer
groups.
Is
it still there?
Yes. And so even though, you know, it's not in good repair, but through... So Chernivtsi is in everyone's imagination. And so there's a listserv of Chernivtsers who have helped contribute to these volunteer groups who have been coming. But also these are some of groups from Germany, groups from within the Ukraine, who are really actively trying to find their past and find this historical and emotional memory of what this great community was. And so there are even, it's bizarre to say this, but they're kind of tour buses that go through old German Jewish-speaking communities throughout the old Austrian Empire, which of course is why there were German speakers to begin with, but also throughout Eastern Europe. I mean, in Prague, for example, there's a developed Jewish sector where I think there is a lot of tourism, and in Chernivtsi there is it's a city of 200,000 people that's pretty hard to get to, so it's not like Prague, but it's a place where there is an interest among, I think, Austrians and Germans, Jewish and not Jewish. I think that's important to say. Many non-Jewish people who are interested in seeing what was this culture like. And so, for example, there's a Jewish museum in Chernivtsi, which is fairly well organized and that offers all kinds of things to people who come and see it. They have archives that they share with people. They have... they explain to people who aren't Jewish certain what ritual objects mean or what certain Jewish celebrations are, and they also talk about the history of Jews in Chernivtsi itself. When we were in Chernivtsi this last September, there was not only an opening of this museum and an opportunity for people who had come to the poetry festival to go to see this Jewish museum, but I was struck by how many people from the German-speaking world, from Austria and Germany, were there who were maybe in their 30s or 40s, who were interested in looking at what was the German-Jewish past of this part of the world.
Meanwhile, this young poet, Selma, who you can't believe she wrote this stuff by the time she was 18, was a tremendously gifted person, and you just, like Anne Frank, you just are so desperate to know what she would have been like and what she would have done, because this guy who screwed her over no doubt was not the love of her life. He was just some, you know...
He was the first person she loved.
Right, and she didn't get a chance to love again, but the potential lost in that person is just so poignant.
Yeah, it is. And I feel it's the tragedy that can never be undone. It's the tragedy that can never be undone. And I must say, not only for Selma, but for all of those people who died. You know, so if half of the Jewish population in Chernivtsi died during the war and were killed, and yet that percentage is much better, ironically, than in communities several hours away. Part of what historylessness, that's a term that Paul Celan used, historylessness, part of what that historylessness is these lives that didn't develop.
Yeah.
So not only is It was the history erased by governments that didn't want people to know things, but it was also all the people who didn't get to live there.
Right. Right.
All those people who just couldn't live regular, normal lives, everyday lives that were enriched in the way we enrich all of our own lives and each
right.
other's lives.
Right, and with those remarkable standouts that we
right.
have in every community, like Selma.
Like Selma, that sort of keep people, that give people a sense of themselves and a sense of place, interestingly.
Yeah. This is
yeah.
our poet.
Right.
This person expresses
exactly.
who we are.
Exactly, exactly.
Would you like to read a poem by Selma?
Sure. Was there one that you liked a lot? Or
You could read the poem that Paul Celan chose, which is simply called Poem.
Right. I would love to read that poem. And Poem. The trees are bathed in softly shimmering light, and every leaf shines, trembling in the wind. The sky, a silky blue and clear, is like a dewdrop scattered by the morning wind. The evergreens are sealed in gentle redness and deeply bow before His Majesty the wind. Behind the poplar trees, the moon observes a child that's greeted her already with a smile. The bushes in the wind are marvelous. They're silver now, and now a luminous green, and then like moonlight spread on light blonde hair, and then as if prepared to bloom anew. I want to live. How colorful life is. It is so full of beautiful, wondrous things, and many lips are waiting, laughing, glowing, declaring their delight. Now look, see how the street is climbing, so wide and bright, just waiting there for me. And somewhere far away, there sobs and screams the yearning that takes hold of you and me. The wind roars, calling through the woods. It tells me that our life can sing. The air is quiet, tender, cold. The distant poplar waves and waves. I want to live. I want to laugh, to bear all of my burdens, and want to do battle, no love and no hate. I want to hold heaven in my embrace and want to be free and breathe and scream. I don't want to die. No. No, for life is red, for life is mine, mine and yours, mine. Why do the cannons roar? Why must we give up life for sparkling gold? There is the moon. It is here, near, so near. I must wait. For what? They die. The numbers pile up, never rise again, never and never. I want to live. Brother, you too. Breath departs from my mouth as it does from yours. Life is colorful. You want to kill me? Why? With a thousand flutes, woods weep. The moon is bright silver in the blue. The poplars are gray. The wind roars at me. The street is bright. Then they come and strangle me. Me and you. Dead. Life is red, roars and laughs. Overnight, I am dead. A shadow of a tree floats ghost-like across the moon, barely visible. A tree, a tree. A life can cast shadows across the moon. A life. They die. The numbers pile up. Never rise again. Never and never.
Helene Silverblatt is co-editor of the book Harvest of Blossoms, Poems from a Life Cut Short. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.